What's so great about? What's so great about?
To What's So Great About, the podcast that asks great questions and gets great answers. My name is Terry.
My name is Andy.
Andy, how the bloody hell are you?
Very well, Terry. Very well. And you?
I too am well.
Good to hear it.
And we are asking the question, what's so great about Wes Anderson this time around?
Uh-huh.
We're in the second movie of our 10 film miniseries, and Andy, we have a special guest.
Who is it?
We have a actor, podcaster, comedian, and most importantly, sibling of one of our co-hosts here. It's Tony Bloody Cantwell.
Oh, the bloody devil are you, Terry and Andy?
Go. Yes, hello.
So you're doing all the films. You've watched Bottle Rocket.
No.
We're recording out of order, but thank you.
No, I haven't. This is the first one I've seen. But we'll be releasing them in order. So.
So we are recording on Pancake Tuesday. You know,
Shrove Tuesday, if you prefer.
Stamp this in amber.
But yeah, the plan is to do them all in order. And I tell you, I was very, hesitant at the start because I just... I had made my mind up already as to what the Wes Anderson franchise was going to look like. Go on, what is it?
Yeah, in honor of our movie, I'm going to have a whiskey and lemonade.
Was that
very good?
That was in the movie. Yes.
Remember, she goes, "You shouldn't have ordered them. You're the one who ordered them whiskey and soda."
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I was ready to play. Why can't I have a whiskey and lemonade?
You
this is what it's like every week, where it's like I say something that I think you should pick up on.
This podcast, I sometimes feel really bad that I'm his co-host. You know, sometimes he's to blame, but sometimes where he'd be like, "Oh, what about that?" I'm like, "No, I didn't. Didn't pick up on that."
But with the greatest respect, I mean, you're kind of, with the respect to both of you, you kind of are the hook, because you're kind of like, everyone gets behind Terry, you know? And normally if Terry was speaking with someone who was like Terry, they would just be like, oh, I kind of, you know, he's a very well-educated film buff, you know? But this is the spin, is that you aren't.
Well, I read a great quote this week about, it was from Fiona Apple, and it was said, if you've ever been in the room with Paul Thomas Anderson and Quentin Tarantino on coke talking about films, you'll never want to watch a film again for the rest of your life. So if there was another one of me here, I don't think it would work. No.
Yeah, and let me tell you, I've got people on my side who message me privately to say you are dead right about that, by the way.
Well, you better stay in private.
People too scared to come out of the woodwork.
What, against me?
Yes, and everyone like you. But yeah, listen, Tony, now that you're here, can I ask you some questions?
Please. Are they quick fire?
They can be, yes.
Long form, essay style.
You're on tour at the minute. You've started your tour?
I've started my tour. I was in Galway, the wonderful Galway, the Town Hall Theatre there. And it was great. It was a really fun gig. I got really nervous before the gig because I found out they weren't serving alcohol.
Yeah,
and
I saw
like, that's what I needed. And I was like, this is, everything's going to be ruined. But I've a tendency to kind of like redirect my stress, and I directed it at that. It was fine.
And
everyone had a good time. So yeah, everyone snuck in.
I was going to say the dry crowd, but obviously not.
Yeah, I mean, there was a little bit of kind of like people laugh and being like, and like, immediately quiet, you know. So it was kind of like...
Fair play to you and any comedian, to be honest. Like,
Thank you very much.
Just getting up in front of that spotlight, oh man, I would be...
I couldn't do it. I particularly remember the first show, the first big one at the Sugar Club. And like, I was sick. in the crowd. And I was thinking, yeah. And because I'm sort of thinking of like, you know, obviously we're different, but I'm sort of thinking like there's some version of me backstage there that it like hopefully isn't feeling the exact same. Hopefully is a bit more composed. And he came out and absolutely killed it. Like, but I was thinking, Jesus! Like,
I remember you were trying to be so like nice. You were trying to be so supportive. Listen, like you'd be great. Like you'd be gonna be so like, and like, you're making me so nervous. Like, and you're gonna be grand. Everyone's gonna be fine. Like, listen. You're rubbing me, tapping me low. It's like, yeah, see if everything's gonna be fine.
The fear just pouring out of you.
Yeah. Andy, you're sweating profusely.
But will the shows that you've done so far, is that pretty much the Vicar Street shows and all that? Do you have more to sort of change, or are you happy?
I do. I've a bit more to change. I had to listen to the whole show again, and like for everyone else, like there was elements of the show that probably felt a little bit like a kind of TED talk that was kind of like, you know. And then I had this thought that maybe led me onto this other thought, but that's not stand up. Like I meant to be like,
you know.
And so all those little meandering bits, I was listening back. I recorded it. And I was just like screaming into my elbow, like, get that a fucking point, you know. So I think with Vicar Street, I'll have gotten to the point. And I have a few little surprises up my sleeve as well.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. Very excited.
I did like the first show because it was more, instead of, I don't want to say just stand-up, but it was like a variety show. You know, you had sketches and you had videos and stuff like that. Like, it was something a little bit different.
It was to kind of cater to my own like short, you know, short attention span, because I've said this like a couple of times, like I think that even if it was like, I remember seeing Paul McCartney after 45 minutes having the best gig of my life, being like, I should wrap this up now. You know. Yeah. and I'm fighting the urge, like he hasn't even played like the hits yet, and he's coming out with the hits, and I'm like, I'm kind of over it, like, you know. Even though, you know, so I kind of know that there's a short attention span for other people as well.
Yeah,
you know, the TikTok zoomers.
Yeah.
You know,
I tell
so,
you
so keep it fresh.
I've been all over TikTok in a minute, and it's really dangerous. It's just impossible to be bored on it. Like,
it's such absolute junk food, and I like it for that. Like, I go to it for that, you know.
Yeah,
I don't want to have anyone just tell me some crazy. I don't want to see a picture of a beach and be like, you know, ever since I was six, you know, the Ukraine has, and like, what are you talking about, you know. And just so I'd like, just like, show me people putting two bits of beech wood together, pouring resin in the middle, and making a table. That's all I want to see.
Is that on TikTok?
All that shit.
Everything you want, Terry. It doesn't have to be all the kid stuff.
I get my TikTok through Twitter. You know, so most of it is like film TikTok or whatever, like that. Like, you know, I haven't like injected it into my veins just yet. I'm still freebasing. Like,
it's probably a good thing.
Toot a little toot every now and then.
Yeah. There's no like direct kind of like topic. Like, I wouldn't go there for anything other than just wasting time. Like, I wouldn't. There's no source of any new news or like a game review, or there is some good, as you said, film kind of like breakdowns of what are probably too long 40-minute essays into their pure base 15-second form, which are quite enjoyable.
They're pushing the limit to like 10 minutes or something.
10 minutes, yeah.
Jesus. Yeah. It's not what it's for. Yeah. When I first joined, I actually just went on your followers, Tony, and just seen who's he following, and like I mean, what can you get from a thumbnail? I was like, I'll just do my own thing. But like you don't even need to be following. It just knows. But anyway,
It's less. I find with TikTok, it's less about like, well, who are they and what's their status and what should I know about them? And being like, this made me laugh, so I'll give it a like. That's what's kind of That's how you grow so big. Is that it could be, if you see it's got 500 likes, it could actually only have, you know, 20 followers or whatever like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'll still follow the you're only as good as your last talk, you know, and people will follow you on that.
I find it mad. Like, I'd be looking through yours.
The last talk.
Yeah. Is that an expression, or did you just come up with that?
They're talks.
Your one, my ticks?
The one on, you know, the mermaid one. And I was looking, I was like, it had like 1.5 million views on your yoga. It's like, it's mad how one will just pop out and just do its own thing.
I post it, repost it again, and it also did great numbers again. And you can just do that. You're just reposting the same shit. I actually had some guy come over to me. He was, I think, Swedish or something. And he was like, you're the guy from TikTok. When I was like, some waiter, and I'm like, me? A guy TikTok? From TikTok? Oh yes. My God.
Do you know who Steve Finnan is?
Have a good night.
Check out my old shit, mate. Yeah. Like, you checked out all my shit, please.
Look, I wanted to ask you something, but because it was something that Dad told me about, but I don't know if you want to talk about it on the pod, so if you don't, I'll let it out. But are you in a movie?
I'm in a movie, actually. I did the first cast read today. I was 10 minutes late.
No way.
for this first reading. and big actors in it, like big name actors. Your man who's always in those Ricky Gervais things, the kind of guy with the big glasses and the scruffy dude. He's in Derek and Afterlife.
Oh, your man, yeah.
Talks a bit like that, yeah. He's in it. He's like the star of it. Natalie Palamides is in it. She's a very funny comedian. Wow. There is... it's the guys who wrote their Dead Cat Bounce. They're kind of this comedy sketch troupe, and it's called Send In the Clowns. It's this crazy post-apocalyptic clown movie that I do not know how it has funding, but it does, and it's got like a lot of funding. And I play if I know enough from my heroes, they get cut out of movies. All my favorite comedians get cut out of movies, but I play Top Knot, who is a South Dublin wanker who takes the opportunity of this like the world ending to like start this like boutique music festival and stuff. So it's just being like a douchey top knot south side. Like they actually said to me, there was no one else. There was no one else to play the role. You know,
they wrote this role with you in mind.
Yeah, kind of like being wanker. Like,
but like, and is the shot in Ireland?
Yeah, it's going to shoot next week. But I didn't realize how big of it as the project it was. I was like, sorry, what time exactly will I be back? Because I've got a son. What time exactly will I be home? And I walk into the room and it's like loads of production vehicles. I was 10 minutes late for the read through. All the actors, all the director, and there's one seat missing and it was for me.
No way.
Yeah, and I went in there today. And I was like really apologetic. But like they didn't know I was late. So then I also made it. So I was like, Hazar, I'm so sorry, you know.
It's like, why? It's like, I was late just now.
Yeah, no one knew. No one knew. So I played it cool.
Well, that's brilliant. And do you know how long you're going to be filming for? Or
there's 3 days that are put aside, but these things always go change. On. I think it could be night shoots as well, which everyone just gets so loopy at, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, if this podcast is out to go by, because we always record two in a row, and the Patreon one's just...
Once the clock strikes
the wheels just come off completely. Like, but that's brilliant. I'm very excited.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you very much. I'm excited. Huge. A movie.
A movie.
Yeah.
Speaking of movies, Terry.
Very good.
I want to talk about something just quickly before, because you know we always do our little preamble of what you've been watching, whatever. And we only recorded a few days ago. But... my daughter was exposed to Encanto, the movie, right?
Yes.
And now all that is on in the house is Encanto.
We don't talk
soundtrack.
About Bruno.
Yeah, Bruno. Bruno's on all the time. All I hear is, Bruno, I want to watch Bruno. We put him on the radio. But then the other one, the fucking Madrigal house. And,
Family Madrigal. Yeah.
I'm assuming you guys both have children. Are you guys living in this hell?
I love it. It's heaven. And I'm always giving out about Lin-Manuel Miranda, but he fucking did it again.
I hate it. I think it's bad. I think it's a bad, messy film. And I don't like that Bruno track. I don't like the Bruno track.
You like the Under Pressure message song?
Don't like the message.
I don't like the message. I feel like it's one big fucking participation medal for kids, you know. Like it's not even I know they all have their kind of powers and everything like that, but it doesn't even seem like her power. Like I thought it was going to be like, oh, her power is that she brings them all together or something. But I don't know. I think what happened, what it feels like to me is Lin-Manuel Miranda said, I want to do a film with you. And they were like, okay, what do you have? And like, I have these kind of like pop tracks. Okay, what do we do with them? All right, can you write some more? How do we weave them together as a movie? And I don't think those kind of threads work. I mean, it's heartbreaking that, you know, the Caterpillar song, that's gorgeous and everything, you know.
But it's what like, song?
You know, the one that's in Spanish.
Oh, yeah. That's the one that they put up for the Oscar as opposed to all the, like, the first Disney song to hit number one on the Billboard charts since A Whole New World,
which one?
Is Bruno.
Why? I don't know. I don't get it with that song.
You know what? I couldn't.
7 foot frame rats. There he is. Back.
You know what?
It's good. Like that's the best one.
That is the best one. I was just doing some like laundry in the room next to Joni's, and like I heard that song on. And then it kept playing and playing, and I went in, and she had on YouTube like an hour loop of just that video on, just sitting watching it. But it's almost like movies now aren't even, you know, like it's like they're almost vessels for just this other forms of content. Like there's a whole stream of content now just about We Don't Talk About Bruno, different sort of animations, different people playing the role, or like it's weird how like movies and albums in a way. Like, it's all about the playlists, and it's all about these little chunks of the movie, you know?
Not like back in 1998 when they made movies like Rushmore, eh?
Hey, there it is. Unbelievable segue, thank you. Well, listen, yeah. Rushmore.
Let's get into it.
These are the names that define our world. The artists who shaped our minds. The rebels who challenged our views. But of all these legends, there is one that stands above all others.
I'm sorry, did someone say my name?
What's the secret, Max?
The secret? I think you just gotta find something you love to do and then do it for the rest of your life. For me, it's going to Rushmore.
Sharp little guy.
He's one of the worst students we've got.
Did you invite that kid to your party?
Max Fisher.
Come on, Dad, there's gonna be girls there. I'd rather die.
Pull your head out of here.
Maybe I'm spending too much of my time starting up clubs and putting on plays. It's time, homie.
Kiss me, little one.
Rushmore.
I like your nurse's uniform, guy.
These are OR scrubs.
Oh, are they?
That was the trailer for Rushmore from the year 1998, written by Owen Wilson and Wes Anderson, directed by Wes Anderson.
I was amazed when I saw at the end, co-written by Owen Wilson. I was like, huh?
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Okay. You're loving this, aren't you?
I certainly am. For the record, I'm a bit of a maniac. I actually watched this film twice.
What do you mean?
Before we reviewed it. Like, I watched it on Saturday, and then I watched it, like, again yesterday and today.
Wow.
I was going to watch it twice today. I think it's one of the best paced get in, get out 90 minute adventures with such a clear first, second, and middle act that's so utterly satisfying. But you're just in and out 90 minutes.
Why? Because, like, Tony, we gave you the choice of, you know, any of his movies to pick. Why did you pick this one?
This was just a film that I, like, one of the first DVDs I had. When I saw it, I'd just never seen anything like it. I'd never seen people talk like this. I'd never seen kids and adults kind of talk exactly the same. Even Dirk in this, you think it's just like that
Dennis the Menace, like.
Yeah, Dennis the Menace, which I loved. I love that flick, you know.
Mr. Wilson!
You know? Taste
funny.
And, you know, God-tier creepo Christopher Lloyd.
Yeah.
That movie.
All the farting, eating all the beans. Remember that? Yeah. Iconic.
Yeah. Child murderer. Like.
But yeah, I always remember seeing this DVD out, like, lying around your room. And, like, I don't know if it was just seeing it so often and seeing him in the beret or whatever, just like, no. but this is the one that always stuck.
Even back then, it was that.
Yeah. 100%.
But it's also just, it's such a, I'd never seen movies that were just so deliberate in how they were shot, and we were so funny that would just have this deliberate kind of, like, there's so many bits, like, I don't know, I don't know which if we can get into the actual film, but, like, just how kind of, like, just the way everything is just so precise and perfectly framed and beautiful, yet then someone will just break, like, you know... Bill Murray would just go right behind him, just hit his kids with the car, or he'll go in for the kiss and just fall on boxes. Like, everything's so... That's what I like about this movie, as opposed to when Wes Anderson gets a little bit too Wes Anderson-y. This one, I think, has that kind of... It holds this up, and it allows how precise and deliberate everything looks to have a bit of a laugh by how things can just kind of break away from that. The real kind of human moments, they're perfectly with this kind of robotic dialogue, the way how they talk.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people describe him as a cold filmmaker, and I don't see it in this movie.
No, I think Owen Wilson really helps with that. I think Owen Wilson really is the heart. They're my favorite ones. But anyway, that's just, I saw it and I was hooked. But that was like the 98, 99 best year for movies.
Good. 99 is a fucking... there's a movie called Best Movie Year, or there's a book called Best Movie Year Ever. Like,
I read it. There's a big portion of Rushmore just as one of those defining. It's held up with a kind of... era-changing movie, as with like The Matrix is, or Fight Club,
will we do a bit of buff, and then maybe we'll throw it to you, Andy, and we can pull the band-aid off, huh?
Sure.
Anybody care to take a stab at the box office.
The budget?
You can take a stab at the budget first if you'd like.
That's, yeah, well, yes. how about $10 million?
Ooh.
Sound good?
Tony, would you like to take a stab?
I would say $5
million. I'm afraid, I mean, if we're going by Price is Right rules, you get it. Because it's $9 million.
Nice. Okay.
Perfect. Okay. Well, we do the within five.
Yeah. That's yeah. So you got it as well, Andy. Well done.
Okay. We both got it. Okay. Great.
Care for the opening? Guess the opening.
$20,000.
Okay, Tony.
I would say opening $2 million.
Okay. It only opened in two screens. Okay.
Well, you should have told us that.
Okay.
43,666.
Holy shit, I was very close. I was within 5 million. Give me that.
Oh,
I was totally joking. I was like, $20,000.
Like, yeah, but two theatres. Okay. I mean, this is the cusp of independent filmmaking.
Okay.
And the domestic and worldwide are the same. So if you care to take a stab.
How does that work?
Well, it didn't get released.
Oh, okay.
Outside of the US. Made $0 outside of the US, so.
Wow. I'll say $2 million.
$191 million.
So you said two.
Yeah.
You said 191. Uh-huh. Answer is $17.1 million.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So nobody got it. No, nobody got that. Fair. One.
Not even close.
A bit of FF fun facts. This film predates Bottle Rocket, as Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson said they always wanted to do a school movie, and it was the treatment for his film school application. Max is a combination of both Wes Anderson and Owen Wilson, in that Owen Wilson got kicked out of school and Wes Anderson used to put on plays and did not get great grades.
I imagine the character's confidence comes from Owen Wilson and his quirkiness comes from Wes Anderson.
Yeah,
I'd say I'm taking a stab.
Yeah. Originally, it was going to be an all Kinks soundtrack. Wes Anderson thought it would fit tonally. They wear blazers, but they're kind of lunatics. But then he decided it would be too much of a British Invasion type thing, so kind of to mix it up.
Did we hear that?
You read it, because I think we were talking about it on our Patreon, I picked Rushmore as like one of my top five soundtracks, and you looked it up.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought, like, is he trying to sneak in an all Kinks movie again?
No, this was...
Okay, okay.
Noah Taylor, you might remember him from Tech Support in Vanilla Sky.
Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. He was the model for Max from a film called Flirting. And then Wes Anderson said he also wanted to try and make it like a 15-year-old Mick Jagger, but a bit skinnier.
Right.
Like in terms of aesthetics.
Okay.
And also in terms of attitude, he described Jason Schwartzman's character as a combination of Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise.
I could see that.
Yeah, I could definitely see
like
that,
this,
weirdly.
This kind of like weird master of everything Tom Cruise brings, but he also has that kind of, I don't know, shuffly Dustin Hoffman typeness.
Some of the line deliveries are a bit Dustin Hoffman, bit graduate, but like devoid of the kind of self-awareness, you know?
Like, there's a lot of The Graduate in this film. I'll get to my big book of Wes Anderson, but there's literally shots from different movies that are in this movie. And the pictures, you're like, wow, that's fucking mad. They're either just like flip perspective
a lot of the over-the-shoulder shots. I think over the shoulder and then with a big face and the kind of, you know, that there's a lot of those.
Wes Anderson was resigned to not getting Bill Murray. He was told he won't read it and you won't be able to get it to him. And at the last minute, they were able to get it to him and he decided to jump on board. He hadn't read Bottle Rocket or anything beforehand.
Brilliant.
And he described working, Bill Murray, excuse me, described working with Owen Wilson and Wes Anderson as, quote unquote, I live to go down with these guys. They have no fucking chance. Bill Murray essentially did the movie for $9,000 and a good profit percentage. But essentially he told Wes Anderson, this is pro bono.
Wow.
It basically allowed them to use the rest of the budget on, you know, filmmaking.
What they needed.
Yeah.
And this was kind of the start of his like support actor sort of... Foray,
he had a rough 90s, and we can maybe go through it. a little bit later on. But he, Bill Murray also gave Wes Anderson a check for $25,000 to finance a shot that Disney wouldn't pay for from a helicopter.
Oh.
So he just like literally wrote him a check.
What a guy.
Man.
I think this was like, well, you have probably his whole, his filmography there, but I can't think of any other movie where he's been sad before, where he allowed himself to be such a low status character.
This is the start of it, kind of. I think this is the first one, and then you see a good few years of it. Maybe
Sophia Coppola.
If you look at Ed Wood, he's kind of a bit sad in that as well.
That's the year after?
That was 94, But the biggest movie he was in, say, in the mid-90s was Space Jam, if you know what I mean. It's not a banner time for his career. Wes Anderson cites Charlie Brown as a major influence for this film and his works going forward. And I think you can see that in just hangdogness of a lot of characters. Like Bill Murray's character is very Charlie Brown.
Even just like the framing of everything. Mm. Literally, you can almost see the actual ground in the horizon line a lot of the time when people walk by, you know?
And I think in Royal Tenenbaums, they have Christmas Time Is Here as one of the tracks. Mm. Used in it, which is awesome, let's be honest. And it was originally due to have a February release, but after seeing the finished product, Disney rushed it to a December release for awards consideration, specifically Bill Murray for Best Supporting Actor.
Mm.
Disney rushed it, did you say?
Yeah, it's a Disney movie. It's a Touchstone Pictures. I don't know if any of you got the same feeling I did once you saw that Touchstone come across and like the Mark Mothersbaugh score. I was like, whoa, straight away, not even a shot of the film, and I'm erect.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, now you're like him? Come on, Tony.
I'm a prude.
Well, now I just spilled my drink all over.
Brilliant.
So, Andy, put me out of my misery.
I know. Okay. I had things I liked about it and I had things I didn't like about it, okay? Just both of you, just give me a second to just explain to you what I thought. I'll say this. It was exactly as I thought it would be, first of all, okay? Mm-hmm. In that...
Mm-hmm. That's heartbreaking.
No. Here's what I liked, okay? And first of all, I will say this. I'm very much hindered by the fact that I didn't see it as a teenager. I think this is a movie that... If I'd have seen it as a teen, I feel like it would have stuck with me. You know what I mean?
I think at my 20s was when I first kind of...
Or whenever, but you know what I mean? Whenever I'd seen it.
I don't think it's one of those things where it's like, oh my God, this film gets me. I don't think it gets anyone, you know? Mm. I'm not taking that. And then if you want to also talk about how maybe you think other films maybe borrowed from this, I think the only thing that really borrows from this is Wes Anderson, really, you know?
Okay. But
doesn't like that.
Okay, I haven't even gotten into that. I'm really annoying.
Spit it out.
Go on.
Here's what I liked. I thought it looked great. I thought Bill Murray was fantastic. I thought, yeah, like I said, it looked great, very vivid, great soundtrack. Some great performances in it. I liked how it was shot. I do actually like that style of sort of fast pans and wide shots and, you know, vibrancy and all that. I'm not a big fan of this style of comedy. You know what I mean? These kind of quirky, off-kilter, quiet comedies. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? I'm not great at articulating it, but I didn't laugh too much, only really at Bill Murray. I thought he was fantastic in it. I thought Max was a little bit too unredeemable or unlikable for me. I didn't see his good side in it. I was just kind of it was slightly off-putting.
That's interesting to hear you say that.
You know, and I mean, will say this, it was a bit weird. Now we'll get into the movie, but I was happily watching along for the first 60 to 70 minutes, and then it felt
pretty
like
much the whole movie then.
The last 20 minutes to half an hour, it felt like it really just... I was like, It was like the movie had ended, but we're just watching them just living their lives now or something. It was like, it's the movie slowed right down to a crawl for me at the end. I don't know if that's just me, but I was thoroughly enjoying it up to a point, and then I was like, oh, nothing's... Like, it really... to me, it got really slow, like slower by the end.
From instead what of picking point? Up. Just out of...
From Bill Murray breaking up with the teacher or whatever. When he sees him, he's like, I haven't seen her in 6 weeks. So, from around that point on, I thought, wow. I was like, maybe it was one of those things where I just hadn't, like, I was distracted and then I couldn't get back into it. I don't know, but that's how I...
That kind of baffles me, to be honest, because... It's, for me, this film is kind of like magic. Like, now, Tony mentioned
why?
It earlier on.
Tell
Tony
me why.
Mentioned it earlier on, 90 minutes. From a screenplay arc point of view, like, he goes from, like, high status... low status. There's a bit the all is lost moment, which is what you're talking about, and then there is his kind of redemption, his upturn. And like, for this to be able to do this when you're not actually going on a quest, you know what I mean, when it's not like I have to go get the jewel from the mountain or whatever, but still have all these beats and all the kind of, you know, the track that is laid is very similar. To be able to pull that off in 90 minutes, I think, is phenomenal. And to be able to be... You say, like, oh, I wasn't redeemed. They're not asking you to totally redeem, but they're showing you the amount of growth that he goes through. And it's small things. You know,
does he, though? Because he gets pretends to get knocked over by a car in the end. He still...
Yeah, but then that's still... Like, he's still not ready. That's after that piece is when he's ready.
Right. Okay.
Like, it's also it's his character thing that he, you know, he lies about his dad, and then he's kind of just proud of his dad. I mean, that's really just, that's the whole thing. Really, it's just like he says his dad's a neurosurgeon because he wants to be like Bloom, you know, and then he kind of sees what Bloom is, and he realizes that he's exactly, you and Herman are made for each other. You're exactly the same. And he's like, oh God, this thing that I've kind of been chased, it was Rushmore, and then it was trying to be like the person, the mogul, and then he just realized, no, it's just to be you. And he still is him. He has still the spectacular performance at
that's
the end.
That's it. Like,
and everyone loves him just because it's him. And he's also there putting Dirk's makeup on. It's not about him. It's about the show.
Oh, that was so good. You know? Well, like,
this is everything Terry's wanted from me in previous episodes.
I don't know when it'll come up, but just something that I laughed out loud at, just, and I just have to bring it up, is there's a bit where Bill Murray is like on the phone. And like, it's kind of ambiguous what he does. He's, you know, I don't know, some steel mogul or whatever like that. And he goes, like, I don't want... alloy. I want steel. And he hangs up the phone. And it's just like, this is like a child pretending to be a grown up, you know, like he's in the big office and the steel's behind him. I want steel, you know, and he hangs up the phone. Like, all the adults aren't really adult. Like, they look like from the perspective of a kid, you only see them as they act, you know. I don't know, it's just, you don't really know much about the adults. Just do not behave like adults. No one behaves
like a normal
person.
That's what I was thinking when they're drinking whiskey with them and all this, and I was like, she's a teacher and he's, you know, whatever, a mogul or whatever.
But it's not like they're doing it every time. You know, that was his like special night, and like then you see how like disastrously it goes.
But Wes Anderson has an ability to do that because he sets such a weird tone that's so foreign and storybook and Roald Dahl-y, you know. You just buy everything because it's like everything just seems like, you know, like it's out of a book, you know.
It's kind of like, well, this isn't the real world, so the real rules don't apply.
Exactly.
If you look at the start of it, it's literally curtains open, it's a play, pretty much. You know, like, if you want to take it that way, it's, you know, it's not real life, it's a story. You know,
and I will say this, because the whole premise of the series is to try and win me over on this. So there's going to be a bit of resistance on this one. I've only seen two Wes Anderson movies, but it's because I've seen Fantastic Mr. Fox and The Darjeeling Limited.
Okay.
So and I liked those two at the time.
Darjeeling is going to be one I'm interested to dig back into, because I haven't seen that in a long time.
Yeah, I felt no desire to rewatch it for whatever reason. Yeah. Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, like, that was, I think, his low point. Darjeeling. I think it was, because I remember reading an article about it, and it was like how Fantastic Mr. Fox is his next movie, and it was summed up perfectly as like how Mr. Fox made Wes Anderson fantastic again. Mm. And it really was, because it was a bit of a risk for him to be like, okay, I'm going to make a stop motion movie about a Roald Dahl book, and they're like, huh? Yeah. Mm. And yet it was a fucking huge hit. And I remember the first time watching Darjeeling, I was like left flat. Now maybe, you know, yeah.
It's weird that I would, that'd be one that I just remember watching.
That's
it,
the like, one you watched. Like,
I just happened to see it when I was a kid. Like, it was on TV. Yeah. But this movie seemed to me, and I'll tell you what I liked about it, because I did like the general kind of vibe of it. I just wasn't and I will say there was bits that I was laughing, like, you know, proper laughing at, like when Bill Murray's he hates his kids or whatever, and he's like,
that
get your head out your ass
in
and
the car.
He just that goes back.
The car is the best. It's like I
that
read.
Was hilarious.
I read in my big book of Wes Anderson that it was like they often irritated him on set, and a lot of his frustrations were like real. I would not be surprised if that is not in the script, and he's just brilliant. Like.
That was the first time I was like, that was a big proper laugh, because it's just. Like he makes no qualms about how much he dislikes his kids in this movie. Like, he just doesn't understand.
It's weird. Like, I think there's a moment like that in I think Fantastic Mr. Fox still kind of keeps those kind of weird moments. You know, those kind of weird, you know, just these little breaks. Like, here's the frame, and like the bit where Dirk spits on the car seems like, you know,
yeah.
Where
that.
You know,
he's like, we're friends like you, who needs friends?
There's so many lines like that. Yeah. Everyone, you know, she's my Rushmore. You know, I know she was mine too. There's so many great lines, and they don't really mean anything, but they're just.
But they mean everything.
They mean everything,
well. Like,
because
yeah, like,
just it's like, rather than a child kind of like just talk and kind of hum and haw, he just simplifies it down to like something a child could say, but probably wouldn't be able to be as precise as that. You know.
Like, it, the way the film starts, like, you know, you get this thing of the math equation.
Yeah.
Like, is fucking genius. I completely forgot about
that. And the actor as well, who sets the tone, be like, oh, that, well, that's pretty much the hardest, yeah. You know, like, that deadpan thing just sets the thing, Max. Yeah.
I don't think he's in Bottle Rocket as well. He's in Bottle Rocket, but I don't think he's in any more after this. I don't think he's a professional actor. I think he's one of their dram friends.
All right.
But yeah, he's like, it's really good, where he's like, let's just say you'd never have to do math homework again for the rest of your lives. And like, just him getting up and doing it, and then you realize, oh, that's his biggest dream. Is like, it's so perfect. Him having the cappuccino going up to the chalkboard and all, like, it sets the tone of what he thinks he is. Mm-hmm. And then,
like, the thing is, when that started, I was like, because I kind of knew Wes Anderson movies were kind of quirky or whatever, I was like, oh, this is just, you know, this is just how the movie is going. You know, I totally believe that this was a credible
thing happening.
That's
going to be his character
in the movie. Like, he's just, you know, with a cappuccino. But like I will say, like, the first hour, and we'll sort of go through it, but the first hour had a good few bits. And because the bits that I found funniest in this almost seemed like they were ad-libbed, or that they were like, they didn't add anything to the story, you know, like the little, you know, we'll get to like Bill Murray running off, or you know, or
that's like definitely not in the script, like 100% not in the script,
you know, like Bill Murray for the first hour is basically just kind of falling around this movie, like, you know, he's just kind of coming in and out, but like it's adding to it, like when he's behind the tree, like he sees him, he's behind the tree, and then he just immediately comes out and waves and walks towards them. And then, like, just, like, runs out of there. So, like, there's things like that that I thought were, like, I don't know if they were just Bill Murray-isms or how much
I think generally the rule of thumb when you hire Bill Murray on the movie is he's going to ad-lib. He's going to go off book. And, you just kind of indulge him, like, because generally it gives you a bit of magic, like.
Yeah.
And, like, even his speech at the start, he's like, those rich kids, like, take aim. Dead center. Like,
yeah.
And he ran into his writings like, this guy is the greatest speaker I've ever seen.
Best chapel speaker I've ever seen. And it's like, that also paints the whole thing of what you need to know from him, you know?
Yeah, like, and you get the scene where, you know, it's Brian Cox and Bill Murray walking out Guggenheim. And he's like, smart little kid, when after Max introduced himself and walks off and he's like sparking up a smoke. He's like, what's his name again? He's like, Max Fisher. He's like, oh, smart guy. And he's like, he's one of the worst students we've got. Yeah. Like, is that like completely into like all the clubs, ends,
you know?
Yeah, and I have it here. Hold on, let me
go
let
on.
Me,
I will say while you're looking that I was thinking, is that Brian Cox? And I was like, no, he looks just like he does in Succession there.
Logan Roy, yeah, he hasn't really aged.
Jesus, he looked okay. Exactly the same. If anything, he looked older in 98.
Yeah.
There's a lovely
the beard
print
does love
here.
For him.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lovely print here.
For all of us.
Of everything that's in it. So it's the Yankee Review, the French club president.
Wish I could see you.
Hey. Oh great, yeah, yeah, yeah. But all those shots, all those, like, everything is center frame. I just, they're just immaculate. Like, they're just, they're all beautiful photographs.
I was trying to take note of, like, which ones come into play in the story later on. Like, and really, the ones that come in are, like, the beekeeper's presidency.
Yeah.
Is
the
one.
The kite flyers,
and
I think.
The kite flyers and the, I guess, the, like, the Max Fisher players, yeah. Really are the ones. But like, even when it's like showing him the Bombardment Society,
yeah,
and like he just like nails him, he's like, you out.
Yeah, I love as well just the one of I know Bill Murray's like on the phone, he just knocks the ball away from the kids playing basketball. Which is like, obviously they had set that up, but the way he reacts is just so violent, you know, that looks like one of those kind of ad libs.
I will say just on the shot, sorry, that like I did think, I mean, if even when I was watching it, I was thinking you could put a bunch of still shots from this movie up against, you know, any other director. Mm. You know what I mean? Like these, like as stills, I was thinking as I was watching, like these would all make great just pictures. It, you know, like just like it, like I'm sure the ones you were trying to show us there in the book.
The one I sent you earlier on of Bill Murray holding the crushed bike over his shoulder, like it's fucking deadly. There's
but
loads
also, like,
of
this is pre-digital. You know, I mean, they would have had some color grading, so everything is just like costume. And, you know, to get all those blues and greens and reds, you
so
know.
So much colour.
Yeah. But just
it looks
to keep
great.
It consistent.
Like, it looks
just those.
Fucking great.
It looks beautiful.
It looks great. Like, and like, it's on a budget. It's 9 million, you know.
Yeah.
You're not, and they're obviously learning how to stretch it. But like, oof, I don't know. Like, it was just, even if I was thinking this, looking at like Miss Cross, right? Mm-hmm. And like her makeup that she wears is so realistic. It's so minimal. It's not like caked on or like you would see in a Hollywood movie. It was like, no, this is like a real person.
Yeah. She did look like a real person.
A real person. Like, yeah, you know, like yeah, those rosy cheeks or whatever like that. Like, I thought it was just so refreshing to see that. Like, obviously, you know, I think as the budgets get bigger, that probably goes away. But like,
Yeah, because a lot of them have a lot of eye makeup in his later movies, aren't they?
I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow, I think that's a character choice, though, more so than like a budgetary thing, I think.
Okay.
But like, you get the whole thing of him, with, you know, he learns that Latin is going to be cancelled. He was trying to get Latin cancelled for 5 years.
There's a line where he was like, where he talks about like sick transit glory fades, which is the name of a brand new song, Terry. And I was like, oh, is that where it came from?
Yeah.
I mean, you can't talk about him now, but
still, it's at the time.
but I was like, that was a real like, oh, you know, when you have a little realization where you've heard something before and then, oh, that's where they got it.
I can maybe try and understand your point.
Try.
About how I did notice that, and I'd have no issues with it, but the end of the kind of beginning of the first act kind of, or sorry, the beginning of the second act kind of, the beginning and the end of the second act are the same, essentially, where, you know, it's kind of two low moments. Like, the second act kind of starts really abruptly. Like, he does his play, he gets punched, then he's out at dinner and makes a show of himself. Like, that all happens in, like, 5 minutes, you know.
Yeah.
Herman starts making his move kind of early on there, you know. And then he's getting better. And then he kind of does get better and then finds out about everything and then he falls again. So the second act is kind of its own kind of self-contained thing that kind of loops. But I can understand that then the start of the third act, he's kind of doing the groundbreaking again, which maybe you're like, oh, I've seen this. But
it kind of just
different.
Felt like the movie should have been done. Not even in the sense that it was too long or anything, but it just felt like, I was like, what, like, it's weird. That this is the pace, you know. That was what I was feeling. I know that's not what you're saying, but, you know, it just felt, it felt weird. It felt like it came to a bit of a halt for the last 20 minutes.
No, you know? I completely disagree. I think the beginning of the end, so the beginning of the third act, when he's flying the kite.
Yeah.
When, you know, he has got perspective. Margaret Yang has kind of, you know, let him have it per se. You know, he's a real, realized he's a real jerk.
Yeah.
When he's flying that kite and he says, like, take dictation, please. Mm-hmm. And you hear Cat Stevens, The Wind, playing. Yeah. I'm like, you can fucking bottle that and sell it, man. Like, I'm a puddle. And then literally for the next 5 minutes of this movie, I'm like holding back the tears. Like, you see you see Bill Murray standing outside that barber shop.
Yeah.
Looks like he's going to kill himself. Max shows up with the two pins and he says, you know, do you want punctuality or perfect attendance? And the delivery of Bill Murray saying, I'll take punctuality. I'm like,
you could wear that one and I could wear the other. Never, never,
never. I'll take punctuality.
Come here.
Man, oh
the
man.
The face this that Bill Murray makes when he introduces him to his dad.
That and he's,
he does three things with his eyes. He's all like, you're not nervous? Oh, and then he just totally melts. And he does it all in one facial expression, being like, this is my dad. And he's he realizes everything. He realizes, oh, he was lying. Oh, why did he want to be like me? I'm sad about that. And then he realizes, oh, no, he's proud of his dad now. And you see all the emotions straight away.
So
and then
good.
What's really funny, which is a bit of a pull the rug, is that he's like, we're going to need all the money you've got, the fitness. And then I spent $8 million on this and she doesn't show. And that's just a funny gag. It's not like, you know, it's not the whole disappointing, the whole film coming to a crash, but it's a funny gag, you know.
And to your point of like, they're the same, you know, Max and Herman are kind of the same. The exact same thing happens with Max earlier on with Rushmore when he's trying to do his groundbreaking. And he gets kicked out. She doesn't show up. Mm-hmm. She had a sick day. And then he gets kicked out of the school.
I will say, I love the scene when he's getting kicked out. And like, you just see him getting given out through the window. And when he moves out the way, he's just blubbering. He's not even moving. He's just like completely, his face is soaked.
I love the little hop that like Brian Cox does where he's like, Max! He's like running down. And he's like, and the guy, like the other Wilson brother.
Yeah, the coach.
Yeah, when he's
baseball diamond.
He looked like Owen Wilson.
Luke Wilson's in this too. He doesn't get a.
OR Scrubs. Oh, are they? And then Bill Murray. Like,
so good.
I love my favorite. You go ahead.
No, well, I was going to say, one of the big laughs that I got was when he's talking to Bill Murray on the, you know, at the wrestling thing, and he's like, you're on the team? Like, I'm an alternate. And you're thinking he's going to go and, like, you know, do great. He just gets slammed straight away.
Shit. It's so it's good. So
that was funny.
How much he eats. Yeah. He really did it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you see
it's
him,
a proper slam.
Hey, good to see you again. Like,
sorry, what were you going to say was your bit?
My favorite bit, though, is the where he goes, he thinks he's being, like, real tough when he goes into, like, he tries to kiss her, you know, and he goes, and she goes, Max, and he goes, it's too late, and then she just gets him, like, in, not even a headlock, just kind of pushes him away, and he's like, his glasses fall off, he's like, no, please, and pushes him, and he walks back
but,
and
like,
falls on the boxes.
That's a real, like, upsetting scene from, I found, like, this watch, I was like, that's real upsetting for her. You know what I mean? Like she gets put through an awful lot of shit in this movie.
But also, like, should she be entertaining this 15-year-old?
No. She's a teacher, though, but, like,
she's putting herself in this position, like, often.
She's not leading them on, I don't think, at all.
No.
I thought she was leading him on a bit.
No, I knew you would as well.
She's sitting on top of him. She thinks he got hit by a car. Fine, but he's lying on her bed. She's lying on top of him. Like,
can we talk about that scene? Please, like, in terms of how it's almost like a perfect, like, how they pull the rug out from you, where we know he's not injured, right?
Yeah.
And they're sitting there and they're first of all, even, like, the confidence of him when he gets into the room, and she's like, I'm going to go get a thing, and he's just like,
puts the tape on.
Like, sorry, it's like no pretense of, like, so this is where it all happens. But then they have the conversation about, like, you know, how his mom died from cancer and Edward Appleby drowned and whatever. And they have this, like, real charged connection, and then, like you say, she's doing the thing and he kisses her and she's like, you know, wait a minute, is it just like, you know, she's gonna say, like, this can't happen, but then she doesn't even get to say that, she's like, is this fake blood?
Yeah.
And she's like, oh my god. And then he's just like, she's like, I'll show you to the door. I was like, that's okay, I'll go out the window. Like, you're going through these, like, that scene,
but he also changes her a little bit, because she they're having a real heart to heart, and then she saw, like, you know, he had, Edward Appleby had more charisma, you know, or you know, he doesn't have as much as Edward Appleby in his one fingernail, and he goes, yeah, dead fingernail. And then she's, and it's really sad and really cutting and really biting, but also really funny. And then she's, I suppose one, and that's the touch she realizes in the harshest way possible. She does kind of have to move on.
She's living in his bedroom. Yeah. Like, oh, because that was the other thing. I was like, when I watched it, I was like, whose house is she in? I know they say it in the room, but I was like, why is she sleeping in like a single bed? And like, I was like, oh, it's his childhood bedroom.
Oh, I didn't like, actually.
That's because he says, oh, you live in his room with all this stuff. Mm. And like, you see, like, there's like airplanes in the top and all that. Like, so, but like earlier on in the film, she's like, oh, I'm just house sitting.
Mm.
She seems a lot more together at the start than she does.
She actually
by the
is
end.
Like,
yeah. And like I was just wondering, why is she entertaining these two? I mean, essentially, I mean, we love them, but like essentially,
when he's 50,
freaks.
She's 30, and then Max is 15. Yeah. You know, and like it's that's awful. Even Terry walked in. My Terry walked in and was like, you know, what age is she? Like, this is awful. Like, why is he even? You know, and it is like they shouldn't really end up. But you know, they're not going to last. Like, they're not going to last.
But who do you mean? Like Bill Murray? And,
no, yeah, like Herman and yeah, you know.
I don't know. Like by the end, I was like, maybe, you know, there's a chance, as opposed to at a certain point in the film, like she says she's in love with him. Like she says, I'm sorry, I'm in love with your friend and not you.
She's a bit of a mess, though.
She is a bit of a mess.
But I think like, she's going to get over her past and he's going to get over the fact that he hates his current life, and they'll do that for a while. You know, it's weird. Like,
and
he,
you never know.
He's,
like,
you know, he doesn't like his present and he's meant to be perfect. She doesn't like her past, and Max is totally focused on his future, you know, and it's just...
true, yeah.
It's all good things. Yeah. All good stuff.
I actually laughed when he first said, I'm 15. I was like, huh, good one. Like, forgetting that, like, they're not in college. Like, it's just
a prep school.
You know,
like,
prep school, yeah. I was like 15. I was like, all right, yeah.
What, do you think he's too old?
Yeah, I was thinking, like, oh, but he looks 24 or something. But but I thought that was kind of like the joke at the start. It was only when they reiterated it again later in the movie. It's like, you're 15 or whatever. I was like, oh, okay.
Mm. He is short, but I think he's might be 20. I think in real life.
Yeah, he's not. He's not.
I thought he was like the same age as the teacher. Essentially,
it's not like fucking Mark Paul Gosselaar by the end of Saved by the Bell, where he's like 30. Like, hey, back for another year, right, Slater?
How great is it that he's still getting work, or is he?
I mean, he's doing the new Saved by the Bell.
Is it so great then? What's so great about him getting work?
What's so great about Mark Paul Gosselaar?
Yeah, coming soon.
That's season 50.
I tell you another thing that made me laugh was when, and I know we're kind of just going all over, but
jumping around, it's fine.
When he's talking, when he goes to see your man who is lying in hospital, and just the little look on his face where he's like, "What do you want?"
I completely forgot about that as well. It's like, because it's a whole thing. Like, they have like. The scene before where he's like, I never took you for an informer, Max.
Yeah.
And then he's like, why are you trying to get her fired? Like, I'm trying to win her back. And having the legs scrap. And then it's like, again, this is part of his redemption where he's like, oh, go see Guggenheim and say, you know, you're sorry or whatever like that. Like, and then, he's like, the fact that he hasn't said anything in 10 days, like, what do you want?
And he's
like, can you recognize me? He's like, Fisher. It's Fisher. Like, he's so annoying. He brought him out of a coma.
I love that. There's also like a couple of like Godfather bits. Like, there's a bit where, you know, he's in the office with Guggenheim and he's like, can you let me off for old time's sake?
Yeah,
can't do it, Max. It's the same way that he says it that Tom Hagen said, he's like, can't do it, Sal, you know. And then he's sitting in the back of the car, and that whole just the imagery, the this complete shadow over his face, and he puts the cigarette out and you can see the hand fully lit, you know.
But there's so like, if you know what you're looking for, then it's chock full of, you know, homage, influence, whatever you want to call it. But like, and there's lit, like the scene where he is getting like the whole, I mean, I don't know if it's my favorite scene, it's, you know, burned into my brain, is that scene where it's like Herman is checked into the hotel and a bee beside the honey, and then
that,
it's like,
that rang a bell from a previous
that bond. Was my, like, I was saying that's why I picked Rushmore as like my whatever it was on the soundtrack one. I was like, this scene is just burned into my brain, where it's like, bang, bang, bang. But by the end, you know, after he gets taken away for cutting Herman's brake, yeah. It's like him getting taken away by the security is like the same as something from a Truffaut movie, but they're the exact same like thing of him being pulled away and some teenager being pulled away. And I'm like, if you know what you're looking for, like, it's there. This guy is a student of it all, like, you know.
This seems like the sort of movie that is, dare I say, wasted on movie watchers like me.
I don't think
all.
So.
I feel so. Like you need, maybe it's just me particularly, but I feel like you kind of really need to, like, I don't spot a lot of that stuff that, I mean,
but this
I
wouldn't have been
bought it.
Like, the, I
but
wouldn't
I get,
be having
like,
this conversation.
Seen it loads,
you know, when I saw it at 17, I would have been having these conversations with people. What I just liked is that I hadn't seen people talk like this and so kind of monotone. And then when you listen to what they're saying, it's so heightened and, you know, it's so emotionless. And it's just funny that someone should say that so deadpan. And I mean, you just, he's borrowing shots, but you don't need to know the shots. It's just like the same way he said it looks good, you know?
Yeah.
But I think maybe you were watching it and thinking, well, not to, you know, you said your issue was the third, but like, you're not missing anything. Like, all the things you're saying that you like, you liked, and you liked it, and there's not missing anything, you know?
Mm.
You know?
What didn't you like? You haven't actually told us what you didn't like apart from the pacing of the third.
Maybe you're waiting for the shoe to drop on something, but it's just stylistic, maybe the stylistic choice of it, you thought something's going to happen to, you know?
It's they're not like I suppose I would always class, like, his movies as comedies, and I'm just very simple in terms of, like, if I laughed a lot, I liked it a lot for comedies. And I know that's too simplistic for a movie like this, because he's given you so much more than just comedy. Like, I get that, and I liked that aspect of it.
I don't think the comedy swing and misses, though, you know.
Well, see, this is the thing, because you was talking about these bits, I'm like, oh yeah, I guess, you know, like, but at the time I'm like, I kind of just overlooked it, or I overlooked that bit of dialogue, or
I don't know if I would describe his films as comedies. That's the thing, like,
they definitely get less funnier, and that's my issue with them, you know. Right. Especially when Owen Wilson isn't writing them with him. This and Royal Tenenbaums are my favorite for those Owen Wilson, I think, breaking the kind of shattering the whole, you know, Wes Anderson builds this whole beautiful piece, and then I feel like an irreverent Owen Wilson joke just, you know, breaks it, you know, and that's what I like about it, you know. Like, you know that line where it's all like, you know, we got him, Dirk, we got him. That seems like such an Owen Wilson line, because it's like, what would he say? It doesn't make any sense, but it's just a funny line, you know.
And how many did Owen Wilson co-write with him?
I think
three?
Maybe Darjeeling, he had a small...
I don't know if he did. I think Roman Coppola wrote Darjeeling.
Jason Schwartzman wrote that as well.
I know he was in it.
He didn't write Life Aquatic. I think it's just these two.
Bottle Rocket as well. Like, so.
Yeah.
Right. I think it's the first three, because he stops working with him after... he's in Fantastic Mr. Fox.
And he comes back, he had a bit in French Dispatch. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, right, right. We'll get to.
Which, yeah, save that for the end, Terry.
Yeah. I mean, that's number 10.
Okay, yeah. No, but yeah, make sure you don't put that in between any of the others.
Yeah, we're going in chronological order here, so I don't...
I mean, I liked it. I don't know, like, do you want to talk about some of the music?
Great soundtrack. That's another thing. Fantastic soundtrack. And I've always been a fan of his soundtracks, I will say. Like, even if I don't always love the movie, the soundtrack was finishing with Ooh La La, like, I'm such a big fan of that song. So, like, it really worked on me. Even though I was giving out about the end, like, I was like, that last minute I was like, yes.
That's,
there's loads
that
of songs
last,
where I'm like, yes.
Like, there's a certain amount of bits in this film that, like, you can't escape from. You know, they're going to get you. No matter who you are, they're going to get you. And, like, even you, who's like, oh, kind of cool on the end of it. That bit, like, everybody dancing together to slow motion to the faces. Ooh La La.
And those,
like,
kind of slow motion, like, British invasion things has become, like, a standard thing of his style. Like, maybe that, if you've seen that other places, maybe seeing that for the first time in 2000 might have blown your mind more, but it's still so palatable and great. And those slow motion shots that are so done to death now, you know, the kind of slow walking shots. He doesn't overdo it, you know. No. I don't even think he overdoes it for a couple of years. I mean, I still think Royal Tenenbaums probably has my favorite with Nico.
Nico?
Yeah, oh my God, it's so beautiful.
That's the one
with Jackson
I had
Browns these days. playing.
Oh yeah, I've actually seen that scene. We actually, because we did an episode on the Patreon a couple of months ago on top five needle drops in movies, which I now realize means the songs.
I didn't get that right the last time either.
Record scratches. Top five record scratches.
But it was that from Royal Tenenbaums, and it was the, I think the Bees one, and in this one was one of them, wasn't it?
Or was no, that was on the soundtrack. One? That was on the soundtrack.
Oh, top five soundtracks. Yeah.
But in this time around, the watch for me, there's like the Rolling Stones' "I Am Waiting" was the one that jumped out.
I'd never heard that.
I was like, "Whoa, my lord!" It really does give you that, like, "Oh, we're sad now." You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you know, this still silent. You know.
Yeah, I had never heard that one. I actually quite liked that one.
Really liked it. Like.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check that out more.
You got, I mean, like I say, that the Who song for me always hits. Like, I just can't. I have such a big smile on my face. That slow motion walking and like sticking the gum was like, gotta, you know, like.
Oh, was that The Who? I didn't actually know that was.
Yeah, The Who. It's weird. It's like, because I tried looking it up on Spotify and the version is different. The one in the movie is like a live version.
I'd never get into The Who, and I'm a big fan of that sort of music. The Who and The Doors and a few of those other ones, just like, they don't do anything for me.
Oh, great.
I don't know if that's just me, but The Kinks I'm a fan of. If they'd have gone all Kinks with this movie, I still would have loved it.
I mean, he does use The Kinks a lot in his movies.
Yeah, he does, yeah. Darjeeling actually has a great one of it, that song. There's a great one
this
from
time,
I can't
Tomorrow?
Remember the name. No, it...
Strangers?
Strangers, yeah.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
That's a good one.
Love
that
song.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, like, we're kind of getting to the end here, I guess. Maybe if you want to talk about, like, his plays, it would be the last thing, because it is the very end, but, like, whew.
But they're really funny, but, like, that's another example, Andy. Like, I'm sure you were probably laughing at just the absurdity of, like, you know.
I was laughing at that.
Hey, Esposito.
Yeah. It's like,
yeah,
and would you, the crazy one? You're the and he's, like, sitting there, you know. And then holding the gun, like, laughing, like.
And then he kissed her and we're out.
Yeah.
But like, even that there, like when he's like in the, you know, camouflage over with the glass, like he looks like Tom Cruise.
I was thinking
hair
that.
Slick back.
He,
like, you know, he
just
looks
like Tom
young
Cruise.
Tom Cruise. There, like.
I was thinking that.
And even like getting your man in fucking Booking.
Yeah,
like, he was a great character.
He's brilliant actor,
like,
as well.
Scottish
yeah.
guy?
Yeah. Mm. But like,
him up in a tree bit? With a knife is just such a funny decision.
Like,
you know?
What does he do?
Times they say hand job in this. There's five different hand job jokes in this.
Yeah.
And there's such a funny, like, he's like, for the whole, like, for the amount of vengeance because of a hand job. And then, like, what would you, you know, what would you say to your friends? You fingered me, that I gave you a hand job. And it's just so funny. Like,
but, yeah, when he, the bit that, like, kind of crystallized that character for me, because we've probably all dealt with somebody like him where he's like, I'm making fun of you, you know, hey Fisher, you know, kind of just busting his balls the whole time, and he's like, your mind's as warped as your ear, Booking, and then he's like, don't get fucking nasty, like, he is, his feelings are hurt, and he is not actually realizing that, like, he's hurting Max's feelings. He thinks this is all a bit of play, almost, like, you know, or like he's just like, I'm just ripping the piss out of you, but now you're after getting nasty. Where it's almost like he doesn't realize, like, this is really hurt. Like, he's obviously hurting Max's feelings for this whole time. And then the bit at the end where he's like, I always wanted to be in one of your plays. He's like, I know you did. And you're like, oh, that's almost worse as well, because he knows that he wants to be involved. And he's not letting him in. Like,
and that's what I love. It's kind of, as well, you don't realize, because the whole thing, you're like, oh no, I'm watching, the three main leads. And then when it kind of pans across to everyone in the crowd, you're like, oh, we actually did be a lot of really interesting characters that all had a satisfying ending. And the guy at the end, with the guy, he's wearing the glasses, he's like, ah, he's laughing so maniacally.
Mr. Little Jeans. But I love that shot across where it's like everybody, and it's like, this kid's gonna burn this place down, and then Bill Murray's like, you're damn right he is. Like, or he's like I can't believe they let him, you know, do a live fire on stage, like, it's a health hazard. Like, sure, he was collecting barracuda last year, like all these little like things. It's like, yeah, he actually was looking to collect barracuda last year or whatever. All this stuff, it's just from somebody who is you know, trying and struggling at like writing screenplays, seeing it, like, it just seems so effortless presented like this. You're like, that little stuff like that just reverts back or throws back to the start of the movie, that you're like, oh yeah, we did.
But
we
if you think about, like, Rushmore kind of is like the demo, like, it's kind of like a remastered demo album. Like, if they'd had the script idea for that long to get into film school, then they learned everything through Bottle Rocket twice. Then they lived a whole life, the two of them, and all they have to do is just add in these lines of dialogue as they find them. I mean, that's really what the writing is, rather not staring at the blank page, but thinking, what of my life could actually fit that didn't work for this could fit into this, you know?
Yeah, he said, like, in the book, in the there's an interview with him, and he said he had two cuts of it. And he said the first one was too sad. And then somebody else said the second one was too happy. It's too funny. And he's like, I don't know how we ended up the way we did, but, like, all I know is we took 4.5 minutes out of it. Yeah. That we ended up with, you know, like, and I was like, that's a great quote. Like,
it's weird that he would say that it was too funny.
Like the other guy, no, because it was
funny at all.
Somebody
said it to him that they're like, you've gone too far in the other direction. Like the first part, the first time was too sad, and now we're kind of gone completely the other way.
You do need a little bit of that edge to it, I suppose.
Well, it's not a broad comedy. It's not a fucking Farrelly Brothers movie. Like, you know, there's too much.
Boy, isn't it?
I reckon if you were to watch it again, if you ever would, you'd laugh your ass off.
I would be open to this. Seems like, I don't think I'm going to cry at it, because even when you were talking about the bit, I was like, what? Distant from. I was really trying to wrap my brains. Like, what scene could he be talking about before you were talking about which one? But like,
there's loads in this. I don't know. Maybe it's just.
Did you watch with subtitles?
Of course.
Okay. Good.
Every time.
Yeah, me too.
I hate it.
I love it.
I hate it because it spoils the jokes.
No, you laugh at the jokes and then you get to hear the delivery.
Yeah. No. You put down the book and you go see the movie.
But I would say overall, like, I wouldn't say I disliked it, but if I was giving it a rating, which I will.
Okay.
I would give it a... I'd give it a 7 out of 10.
That's pretty good.
A 7?
Yeah.
Blasphemy.
7 out of 10.
I think he gave In the Tall Grass a 7.
Yep. Sure did.
Comparable, yeah.
I'm just saying, different movies, but I enjoyed them on the scale of what they were trying to give me. 7. From my brain from what my brain filter let into my head, that's a 7 out of 10 result.
Okay.
Coming out on paper.
Wow, this is what a lot of people, like Tony's talked about, consider this to be his best.
I was going to ask, because I was like, we were sort of, you know, we have a few sort of guests coming on during the week, and like Rushmore was everyone's sort of like favorite.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It seems to be the one.
I think the Royal Tenenbaums, it might be my favorite. But
favorite.
But I think Rushmore is his best, and it's a perfect film.
Yeah, right. I think it's a perfect film. And there's a quote in the book where it's literally, this guy, Matt Zollersites, has written an essay for every one of these movies. And he said, there are a few perfect films in the world, but Rushmore is one of them. And I wholeheartedly agree.
You giving it a 10?
See, if I give it a 10, I've nowhere to go. I give it a 9.
It's a 10.
It's perfect.
It's a 10. It's okay that the rest of the series, like, that's what's interesting about the whole filmography of Wes Anderson.
I can't give 10 tens, Tony.
Yeah, but you could give it
9 thumbs up. What the hell is that?
I do think, though, that he gets too preoccupied with the precision of the film. And
he gets too Wes Anderson-y?
Yeah, I think he's been a blank check director that has luckily had a very good success. But I think that some people need to maybe say, look, you know, challenge him a little bit on some of the heart.
I mean, funny enough, we actually ended up going to see a Wes Anderson film together. If you remember, Tony, I ran into you.
Oh, yeah.
And you're Terry. Me and my Faye, and you and your Terry. We went to see Isle of Dogs.
Yeah, wasn't mad together. At it.
I have to watch it again. I haven't seen it since that night.
Yeah,
That's a stop motion one as well.
That's a stop motion one. It was at the time I didn't have it top tier, put it that way. I'll be interested to revisit it. It's about dogs, Andy.
I love it.
Bunch of dogs.
The fact that you two weren't in it makes my ears prick up, if you'll pardon the pun.
Like a dog.
And, yeah.
On an island.
But yeah, that's generally a good sign for me. Not so much, but I mean, Terry, when you dislike a movie, it makes me pay attention.
I mean, I think for a long time, Royal Tenenbaums was my Wes Anderson movie. I think Grand Budapest is probably my Wes Anderson movie now. I think
I'm looking forward to
his best.
Weirdly, I think, just on Grand Budapest, even though I've said that Rushmore is his best film, I do think if I can do a kind of caveat that the Grand Budapest is him doing his best version of a film. You know what I mean? Does that sound? I know that they sound exactly the same.
It sounds the same.
No, it's him. It's him with his precision getting it exactly how he wants to get it.
It's the most Wes Anderson.
It's his masterpiece. It is his masterpiece.
Yeah, it is his opus, I think. So I'll be interested to see as we go along because...
I'm open.
Yeah.
The podcast has changed me. I'm open.
I think you'll like Royal Tenenbaums. I think you'll like Grand Budapest. I think you'll like Moonrise Kingdom.
I don't know if he will.
Really?
Interesting. Yeah.
Okay.
Technically, I did go to the cinema to see the Royal Tenenbaums. I was saying to Terry on a previous pod.
I remember this.
But there was people riding behind us in the cinema. And like their foot was like coming out like right beside where we were sitting. So I was too preoccupied with that, to be honest. Well, listen, on that note, should we get our plugs in?
Yeah, please. Tony, do you want to go first with any plug-in?
Yes,
you
when? What date is this? Is this out?
This will be released on the
21st.
21st.
Wonderful. Right. Well, this Thursday, well, actually, these gigs will be sold out.
Well, aren't you confident?
This weekend, I'm performing in Vicar Street three times.
Hey, we'll be
Hell
yeah. It'll be great. Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Yeah, it should be fun.
And it's also, I mean, a bunch of listeners from our podcast are also going to be there that we'll probably end up meeting up with during the night as well. So
I got
be
chatting
a whole big,
to, sorry, and I should have got his name. I got chatting to someone who was like, I love your brother's podcast. It was at my gig. I don't remember his name now, but he was very fond of your podcast.
From Galway. We made it to Galway.
No, this was a different Dublin gig.
Oh, okay. Forget it then.
Sorry, brilliant. You're not big time yet.
I'll take it. Listen, but yeah, so you're on in Vicar Street.
Yeah, check out at Tony Horror for all the dates. I am on tour. I'll be in Greystones, and I'll be where else? I'll be Dundalk and Cork. That's a big gig in the Everyman Theatre on May the 1st. So that'll be fun. Dreamgun Film reads it back in Vicar Street as well on May the 4th, I think it is, for the Star Wars this time.
Oh, yeah, that was the reschedule.
Reschedule for 2 years on the trial. So,
are you playing Luke? Can you tell? Can you say?
I don't know who I'll be now. I actually don't know. I think we don't know until the day, and we don't have the script until the day. So
that's class.
Yeah, so
and you all, he is also the sole host of the Tony Cantwell Shit Show, an excellent podcast, if
much.
I may say.
Thank you very much.
Which you can find after you've listened to and rated ours.
Of course.
Speaking of that, you can find us on Twitter at WSGAPod, on Instagram at What's So Great About Pod. You can find links to everything we do there, including Patreon freebies, our latest episode, and the Patreon itself.
Ooh, the Patreon. Well, over there on our Patreon, we have two tiers. We have our Pay What You Like tier, which are Hungry Hearts, or our $5 backers, €450, and of course, we don't know what it is in sterling.
Frankly, we don't want to know.
You guys are our big shots. And for signing up for that, you both get the exact same thing, except you get some merch when you're a $5 backer, and you get your four... bonus episodes per month. So you get one on the main feed here and you get one on the Patreon. We do a lot of top fives. You get all our back catalogue of What's So Great About Marvel, What's So Great About 90s Action, What's So Great About Ryan Gosling, What's So Great About Big Willy's Flops, aka Big Will's Bad Movies, and a bunch of other. We've done Pitch It in H's, we've done, you know, catalogued playlist for one another. It's a good time.
I'm really
it's
looking
good
forward
time.
To listening to your top five video games. That's one that just
came
out.
Oh, yeah. Forgot about that.
Yeah.
We literally just recorded it.
Yeah,
we had a lot of fun with that one.
That's good. But it's all good fun over there. So that's where all the good shiz happens. But if you can't afford, I mean, the pay what you want even, and look, I'm just going to say, if you don't want to go over on the Patreon, that's fine, but you can do me a favour, all right? You're here now, you're listening to us. You can give me a rating and a review. Now, Andy, in this movie,
go on.
Herman Bloom drops $8 million on an aquarium. Now, I don't want an aquarium. I don't want $8 million.
That'd be silly.
I don't even want an 8-star review. I want a 5-star review. Give it to me on iTunes, Spotify, your podcast, your choice, anything. Just give me it. I need it.
Yes.
Remember when this used to be Eurobit.
What? The 5-star review?
Yeah, this used to be Eurobit. 5 stars only. Remember those simpler times?
They were a simpler time. But I like to see you on the fly think of a number from what we just reviewed and stick it into the bit. That's the new bit.
That is the bit.
Well, listen, folks. First of all, Tony, thank you very much for joining.
Thank you very much. Had a wonderful
huge
time.
Throbbing thanks.
Okay, too much.
Dirty.
You guys, you Cantwells are such prudes. You're right. I'm just trying to be mean.
Too much, Terry.
Yeah.
On that note, we will be back next week with what movie? Rushmore?
No, this was Rushmore.
Royal Tenenbaums.
Bet you're regretting coming
whatever,
on there, huh?
Whatever the fuck, next week. Goodbye.
Wonderful.
I am waiting. I am waiting. Oh yeah, oh yeah. I am waiting. I am waiting. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Waiting for someone to come out of somewhere. Waiting for someone to come out of somewhere. You can't hold out. You can't hold out. Oh yeah, oh yeah. You can't hold out. You can't hold out. Oh yeah, oh yeah. Waiting for someone to come out of somewhere. Waiting for someone to come out of somewhere. See it come along. Someone